From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Jeffrey Wright will join us on his regularly scheduled day. Got a couple more guests set up for tomorrow as well. We're going to talk with Anthony Dasher on Friday of UGASports.com. Also going to talk with Neil Stratton of Inside the League. Is that right?
Come up for Friday?
Yeah. I'm going there just guests for the week. So
yes.
Those coming up to you the next 2 days, but Jeffrey, today we'll discuss the latest masterpiece from CBS Sports on Shea Patterson, because that won't die, and more through today's show.
Is it bad that I still can't read all the way through that story? I get so bored with it, and it's almost like I
Well, they admit in the second paragraph that they only got to look at it and promise not to report anything from it, and then proceeded to write 800 more words. So I'm not really sure what it was actually about, but all right, great. Have a good day. Podcast brought to you in part by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West.
It's insane.
In Oxford. Go get a daiquiri. Bring us one. Six flavors there available to you. When you stop in, little as $3 to get a hold of one. You can also get one as big as the biggest Butterfinger Blast Sonic has, 44 ounces of daiquiri. If you so choose, if you're going to go with something 44 ounces, daiquiri does sound better than Butterfinger Blast. So do that, or go next door to the Oxford Crystal, get the Red Hot Milkshake. You also can get plenty more things, including the Ghost Pepper Cheese Sauce thing we were telling you about on the Crystal. And more. And again, we're coming to you in the Clark Ford studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900. 662-257-1900. You call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, then send him. He'll wait 15 minutes. He's going to send you a quote. He's going to send you a quote within 15 minutes, and then you're going to get that quote, and it's up to you. It's going to be no haggling. It's going to be right to the bottom line. It's going to be a great deal that is going to include a new Ford vehicle, great service after the sale, everything you could want. So you get your quote, you can shop it around, or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other podcast listeners, and that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of the deal, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. Mention any of our family of podcasts, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Appreciate all the patience. We skipped a day of the podcast yesterday for me to play in the Pro-Am. Some people have asked kind of how it went.
Yeah, how'd it go?
Had a good time. Played with Sung J-M, a Korean player that's currently the number one player on the web.com Tour Money list.
Let's get right to it. You beat him on the fifth hole.
I did. He already has his PGA Tour card locked up for next season. He's already won on the web.com this year.
Do you have your PGA Tour card?
I do not have my PGA Tour card.
You don't have it yet. Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. He's excellent. We had a bit of a language barrier, but I give him a lot of credit. He knew a little more English than maybe I expected. He was very personable, helped us read some putts, made some jokes. He was a pleasure to deal with, so glad that I got a hold of him. And I think it's a guy that down the road I'll probably go, yeah, I played with somebody who's winning on the PGA Tour. I think that's a very, very likely thing as his career moves forward. He's the second youngest web.com winner ever, just behind Jason Day by a couple months. That career is the same. That'll be all right for Sung Jae. And he just turned 20 years old, so he will be on the PGA Tour prior to his 21st birthday later this year. But, yeah, I think he shot 67. I think he had seven birdies. He made a double on five, the same hole that I did make a par. So I have a two-shot win against Sung Jae M on one hole. On number five yesterday, there was. I walked off the green. I looked over at Richard Cross, and I went, "Well, I'll always have that one.
Yeah.
I will always have that one." So,
now on the other 17 holes, you did not quite.
I mean, I might have had a couple more pars and tied him, but no, I did not win any more holes. He also did not hit any of those big banana slice things off in another fairway, where you know I make like a nine if we weren't playing a shamble, and everything was pretty dead straight from Sung Jae.
You're ruining the story. So you tied him a couple of times and beat him once.
That's all that really
awesome.
matters. That's
you have a major two-stroke win and a couple of ties against one of the top 50 players in the world.
I think he's ranked 104th right now, but he would be higher if you didn't have the ranking system probably. Good player. They're all good players. I mean, everybody goes, hey, you know, web.com. I mean, these dudes, 25 of these dudes are on the PGA Tour next year. I mean, like, if you go out there and watch them, you know, the guys that just play golf at their local club and go, hey, our club plays really good. No. Like, it's a little different deal when you watch these cats out there.
It's like I've always said, go sit behind home plate.
Yeah.
And watch a major league starter go to work.
A little different.
A little different than what you're going to see at the JUCO.
I got off the first tee and hit a ball in the air and in the middle of the fairway. That was I really wasn't nervous. I was kind of laughing on the range beforehand. I said I kind of expected to have a little more tension built up, but it really wasn't a big deal. Like there wasn't a gallery around. I mean, there's people around and there's a pro standing there watching you. But for the most part, it wasn't a huge deal. Hit the first ball in the fairway. That was good. It was also a little strange. So we get to number 12 and a camera crew comes up from the PGA Tour. And they're doing a video segment, video short documentary thing on Sungjae. So had cameras following us from 12 to 17. That was a little bit of a different environment, a touch. You've got multiple cameramen setting up. You've got people walking beside you, interviewing him and staring at him, going, "Okay, let's get home here. Let's get back down to 18." But no, overall good. Hopefully. A lot of money was raised for Century Club and the charities that they support. They do a great job and hopefully helped a lot of people along the way. So, good day all around. Had a good time. Tournament started out today. Braden Thornberry teeing off with Ben Walcott in the same group sometime this afternoon, meaning they'll play in the morning tomorrow. If you'd like to get out and watch them with Neiman going pro, Braden is now the number one amateur in the world. Currently, so he tees off later today. Jonathan Randolph teeing off today in San Antonio as well. So people we talk to and whatever, yeah. All over the place. We're
everywhere. You know, we're a big deal. Yeah, we are a big deal in the world of golf.
All right. So
I'm friends with the professional golfer. You've now defeated a professional golfer. I think it's obvious where this is headed.
You know, if
tomorrow on the show, Tiger Woods, ladies and gentlemen.
If he screwed up a hole, I'm really glad he screwed up the easiest one on the course because, you know, when he opened the door, he opened a really wide door.
You're ruining the story. Years from now, I beat one of the best players in the world. Just on a random freaking Wednesday, I showed up.
Beat him. Putted, tapped in, and then had to watch Sungjae Im finish his hole. It took a minute.
It was ridiculous. It took forever.
Oh, gosh.
And now, if he doesn't become a superstar, you'll be able to say, sort of like Michael Jordan did about Muggsy Bogues, you'll be able to say, I ruined him. That defeat.
He never recovered.
He couldn't. He got in his head. Never could get over it. Bless him.
He was incredibly polite. We got to take – he had to walk, but – the amateurs take cards, so the pro and his caddy walk, and then the amateur takes cards. And a really dumb rule, frankly. Give them a cart and let them whatever. But
would it really hurt anybody if the guy got to ride in a cart one day?
Yeah, so I guess in their minds it's unfair to the other guys who aren't in the pro-am who don't get a riding round on the course, maybe. I don't know the reason.
Whatever.
Nonetheless, though, I was riding with – Brian Rippey was in the cart with me as part of our pro-am team, and – we get to the first spot where they're going to hop, you know, his caddy and the guy is just going to hop on the back of one of the carts and both carts to get to the next tee box. And Brian's like getting out. He's like, you sit down. He's like, if I fall off, that's okay. But if you fall off, we're probably going to get in trouble here. And the crew was very, very nice. He's like, no, I'm good. And we were like, no, we're sitting there arguing for several minutes because there's no way we were letting the Korean jump on the back of those bags in that golf cart to get to the next hole. I thought, yeah, he falls off and I'm probably in trouble.
Yeah,
so
that becomes a national story in Korea. And all of a sudden it's there's trending in Korea, the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Korean golf savior falls off golf cart as media member throws him into the bushes. That would not
kill Chase Parham.
Yes. So, anyway. All right. So, let's jump into it here. I'm really not jumping into it. I'm just telling you it's there, this Dennis Dodd story.
I was shocked that Dennis Dodd was given this story. I am stunned, frankly, that Dennis Dodd was able to get this, that Dennis Dodd was able to reach out to really pry this story from the hands of one Thomas Marsh.
I'll just read a couple paragraphs.
Were you not surprised?
Blown away, floored, befuddled, if you will.
Don't ignore me today.
In a detailed filing regarding his transfer case, former Ole Miss quarterback Shea Patterson tells Michigan officials,
yes,
he was lied to by former Rebels coach Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss officials repeatedly over a 20-month period in an attempt to keep him on campus and discredit both media and NCAA, and the NCAA. CBS Sports has learned.
Thomas Mars has told CBS Sports.
In a scathing 9-page rebuke of Ole Miss to the NCAA, Patterson begins by saying, quote, "I'm not going to hold anything back, dot, dot, dot." I think he actually used dot, dot, dot. Probably not. But he put dot, dot, dot in quotes.
He did. I don't know.
You don't think Shea used ellipses?
I'd love to know. We could just drive over to the building and ask his brother if he has a copy.
CBS Sports was allowed to view the document that was part of the transfer appeal package, but agreed not to report its details due to the sensitivity of the ongoing case.
Sensitivity.
Patterson's appeal.
You're a hero, Dennis.
Patterson's appeal to become immediately eligible at Michigan is now in the hands of the NCAA for a final resolution. Let's see.
Has the NCAA responded to Ole Miss's appeal yet?
Five other former Ole Miss players are expected to file similar appeals, but this is the first time an individual's detailed claims have come to light in a contentious Ole Miss transfer case. Come to light because Mars handed you the documents for you to look at, but sure.
Literally, he said to Dennis, hey, you can look at these. You can't quote them.
In his filing, Patterson said he found a, quote, trustworthy, high-caliber coach with values, integrity, and leadership qualities in Jim Harbaugh. he began having conversations with his father about transferring in the middle of October 2017, after an injury. Let's see. Quote, "It doesn't seem fair to me. The only thing standing in the way of Coach Freeze making $5 million a year at another school was the discovery that he wasn't the trustworthy, straight-laced role model that he claimed to be," Patterson states.
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, trying to get a pound of flesh off Freeze is not really the point of the
Hugh Freeze is not the reason that this is. It's bizarre. The whole thing's bizarre.
Bjork says, "There's nothing new here. We do not oppose a student-athlete competing right away if the decision is based on accurate information, NCAA bylaws, and applicable waiver standards and relevant care precedent."
If you think your day is awkward, imagine being Shawn Patterson. That dude's walking around the building wearing Ole Miss gear. You don't think it's awkward, do you?
I think Shea said in there his brother lied to him? Or is the argument that somehow a dude in the football building every single day was completely left in the dark about everything else going on?
That's clearly the argument. In all seriousness, all jokes aside, that is clearly the argument that is being made.
Got a couple more quotes by Mars.
I don't know about you, and I know that it's our responsibility to talk about these stories, and so we will. I have fatigue on this story. I think you do too, based on just watching your body language. Yeah, we've been talking about it for so long.
I don't cover Michigan, and it has zero impact on Ole Miss at this point.
Right.
Zero.
And I don't think, from everything I can gather, I don't think Ole Miss gives the slightest of dams whether Shea Patterson takes a snap at Michigan this year or not.
All Ross said was, in his opinion, the filing was a lie, hence he couldn't go, yeah, I support the filing.
Right.
That was it. It was nothing to do with his eligibility or lack of eligibility.
I've not gotten any sense from anyone involved that it is a goal of theirs to prevent Shea Patterson from playing next year. I would tell you if I got that. I don't think they care. I think Ole Miss's approach on that is that's Michigan. I don't know. That's a you deal.
Ask them.
Well, if he plays, he plays. I don't think anyone at Ole Miss cares. They have, frankly, other things
to... Maybe I missed this. Why did Patterson need to write a letter to Michigan officials?
No, he didn't. He wrote it to NCAA officials.
Oh, well, it said
Michigan. He wrote it to the NCAA. I think Dodd is trying so busy to try to make this look like he got this from someone besides Thomas Marsh.
Yeah, in the lead, in a detailed filing regarding his transfer case, former Ole Miss quarterback Shea Patterson tells Michigan officials he was lied to by former Rebels coach Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss officials repeatedly over a 20-month period.
Maybe he has to tell Michigan and then they submit it as part of their whatever. I don't know.
Okay. Sure.
People wonder why I'm make fun of the process. The process is silly.
See, this, even here, this is not accurate. In Dodd, in like the ninth paragraph, goes, CBS Sports reported last week that, quote, Ole Miss had objected to Patterson getting that waiver. That is not the context of this.
It's not true. But it's the narrative that Morris has put out, and he's found two or three national reporters, not Andy Staples, two or three national reporters, not Andy Staples, who are gullible enough to just go with it. And they get clicks. They're in click. That's the part of journalism that's click-based. Support The Athletic. Support sites like ours that are subscriber-based. It's in your best interest as a consumer.
Obviously, I have no desire for them to be in my market, but you see where The Athletic's jumping into the college football game in team-specific sites?
I did not.
Yeah.
Where?
Georgia and Tennessee so far. The Athletic Georgia hired Seth Emerson.
Oh.
Yeah. That is one crowded college football market. I mean, a ton. I mean, like four times the amount of media we have here.
If I'm covering Georgia, and you'll hear from Anthony Dasher tomorrow, we didn't talk about this, but I don't want The Athletic to open up The Athletic Atlanta anytime soon.
Well, they've got a specific Georgia.
I know, which tells you that someone's going to be covering the Braves, and someone's going to be covering the Hawks, and someone's going to be covering the Falcons here soon. And frankly, all jokes aside, when you're putting 72,000 people in a stadium every week for a soccer game, you probably could put a rider on the United.
I do have a hard time believing that simply a vertical for Georgia team site is gonna sell enough. I do wonder about that. People are very loyal to their
yes.
team sites.
Yes, they are.
I don't know.
It's
a crowded space.
I don't know where it's going.
I think you'd have success with Atlanta and then yes. have an offshoot to it. But if you go, no, I want a vertical just as
no.
Georgia team site.
No, I agree with that completely. I'm saying if I have a vertical for a Georgia team site, I need there to be Atlanta support in the form of Braves coverage, Falcons coverage.
Yeah, I'm reading here. Today I'm excited. I'm reading from an Athletic story. Today I'm excited to reveal the expansion is coming to The Athletic's college football coverage as well, with dedicated beat writers for major programs around the country, and we'll begin that push with the conference that placed two teams in last season's national championship game. We're thrilled to welcome distinguished writers Seth Emerson to cover the University of Georgia and David Ubin to cover the University of Tennessee. Seth's first story for The Athletic ran today, and Dave will begin writing next month, and then give some bio information. Stuart Mandel, the editor-in-chief of the All-American, the college football offshoot of The Athletic. So, anyway, just some media news there for you as we move on with today. The podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Is the website to go to see all about different options, including an annual package for them to take care of your yard all year long. In doing so, you get free pressure washing, driveway and sidewalks, or if you've got a pressure washing job more than 2,000 square feet, $50 off. Again, 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. Let 7 South set up all of your tailgating next fall when the football season rolls around. I think the first home game is September the 8th. I think that's right. Seven home games in Oxford next year. You want 7 South to be the ones that hook you up, whether it's for an entire season package, whether it's SEC-only package, whether it's just one or two games. Let 7 South do it. They're celebrating their 10th year of business this season. Try 7 South tailgating once. You'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South tailgating will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one will match their customer service, their attention to detail. 7SouthTailgating.com. on April 28th. That's next Saturday at World Music Nashville at 7 p.m. Go check out the Moonlight Grahams. They're a folk Americana band. Includes Ole Miss grad John McCann. April 28th, World Music Nashville, 7 p.m. You can check out their album, which is called The Moonlight Grahams, on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. You can buy tickets to the show at TicketZone.com. Moonlight Grahams, April 28th, 7 p.m., World Music Nashville. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
Now let's go to Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Good morning, Jeffrey. Back on the regularly scheduled Thursday time slot. What's going on in the Bluff City? I really hadn't talked to you a whole lot other than a little bit yesterday. Penny's finally got to have died down a little bit. So what are y'all doing?
Are you kidding me?
Okay.
We're legitimately building a show today around the third assistant.
They got a point guard commitment the other day, and the city went nuts.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, they got Tyler Harris to commit, and I don't like. It's very difficult to explain to people other than he is a very electric type scorer. So those guys are fun, but the big deal is that, you know, a month ago, the Tigers weren't getting either Alex Lomax or Tyler Harris, and now they've gotten both, and it's just created this kind of energy and hoopla. And, you know, for a while they'd been told, hey, you know, Memphis kids don't want to go to Memphis anymore. And it's kind of like every single narrative that Tubby Smith's staff put out there is kind of being, you know, tested and even proven false almost immediately. And so it's created this energy and buzz. And let me tell you what, your boy plans on riding the wave as long as possible.
Speaking of recruiting and energy and buzz and narratives, if I'm correct, based on Twitter, this is going to make some Ole Miss fans mad. I bet I'm right. Based on Twitter, if I'm correct, based on a tweet put out by a member of a staff, I'm going to leave it that vague. Ole Miss has lost out on has fallen behind on a major football recruit. 2 Corinthians.
You don't know that it's major.
Might not be major. Might be any football recruit.
Yeah, that's
lost the target.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeffrey. We're having our own conversation.
Okay, I was like, am I missing? Is there an inside joke?
Yeah, there is. I'll
text you the name in a minute, and you'll get it completely.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
And I know that's not fair to those of you out there in podcast land, but sometimes it just kind of is what it is.
So... Neil and I talked about it the other day. Just think to stay on the basketball train. Ole Miss gets the home and home with Butler starting next season. Is that indicative of potential scheduling, in your opinion, or is that a one-off deal? What did you kind of read into that when they got that done pretty quickly under Kermit Davis?
I read what Neil's been telling me for the last 3 or 4 years, which is it doesn't really matter. Like, this is the thing about the schedule and metrics and basketball. It doesn't really matter if you win the games. You just have to play them. Like, that's what's so strange to me. Like, you don't really get credit. You don't really get, you obviously get, you know, top 50 wins and whatnot, top 25 wins. Obviously that matters. But for the most part, it's, you just have to play a tough schedule because then they kind of, you know, then whatever you're, you know, as long as your conference record is 2-3 games over 500, you're good.
You don't get punished for losing these games. There's nothing, when you play these games, there's nothing to lose. When Ole Miss plays Butler, if everyone schedules appropriately, and both of these programs appear to be scheduling appropriately, someone is going to win. No one's going to lose.
Correct.
That's the mess. I mean, if you want to take college basketball and learn about scheduling and what, look at Mississippi State last year, who won 20-something games, but they didn't play anybody, and so they never won. And then go look at Alabama, who played a really tough schedule, got a few wins, a lot more losses, but the losses didn't hurt them. The losses didn't count as losses, but the few wins counted as wins, and they got in. A&M as well.
You know, the other thing is, it's not even that losses don't hurt you. It doesn't even matter if you get blown out. Like, as long as you just played the game, like, they kind of tip the cap to you for just playing the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you lose by 30, it doesn't matter. Whoever wins in those games gets a win, and whoever loses doesn't get a win. But they don't get a loss. They don't get a black mark.
It's all human beings doing it. When you get these kind of games, does it help you get more games? That makes sense, right?
Yeah, sure.
I think so. I think the bigger deal is that obviously everyone wants like the home and homes with, you know, a Big Ten team, or a home and home with, you know, a Big 12 team. But obviously now with the SEC Big 12 challenge thing, that kind of sorts itself out. But you do have to finish in the top 10. So Ole Miss won't get the benefit of that next year. But I think the ones that are the more realistic ones are, you're going to have to start playing Big East teams and hoping that they'll do home and homes. And then you have to play, you know, maybe the top end of the American and whatnot. But, you know, traditionally, recently, these Big East teams were not as willing to do home and homes. But now you're seeing them have to do it because I think they're even worried about scheduling.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting a home and home with Cincinnati or SMU or something like that. That'll work out all right.
So I'm just picking this up. Forgive me. Sam Mitchell joins Penny Hardaway's staff. Sam Mitchell's a hell of a good basketball coach.
Correct. And he's, you know, he former coach of the year for the Raptors, was the interim coach at Minnesota. He's recently been in the Atlanta area running an AAU program, or I guess now the technical words, grassroots basketball.
He coached a team in Mobile when Mobile had like the equivalent of what is now like a D-League team.
Yeah.
And he would come on our radio show and we would talk about basketball. We'd do the mandatory question or two about his team. Nobody cared. And then we would talk basketball, and he's phenomenal. He'll be a great, if you can get him on your show, he's fantastic. Dude knows basketball inside out, backwards, sideways, everything. He can really break basketball down. He will be a tremendous resource for Penny.
So that was kind of the whole, you know, everyone kept pointing to the fact that, you know, quote unquote, Penny needs a college basketball head coach. And now you look at the staff, unless you consider Tony Madlock a head coach, there's not one on the staff.
Well,
good staff.
It's a really good staff. And Tony did a little bit of that where he can help Penny organize, if Penny needs it. He can help Penny organize a day.
Yeah.
You know, how do you plan a road trip? How do you plan, you know, a tournament? How do you manage class schedules? How do you organize a practice when this is your window of time? A lot of things that, frankly, I think are somewhat overstated and overrated. But if he needs a resource who has done it, even in a limited capacity, he has done it. And he's been around college basketball forever, so he will be able to help him. And Mitchell's going to be able to look at film and really break film down, come up with a game plan, and probably be, you know, look, let's not make Penny a guy who doesn't understand basketball. He's played a lot of basketball. But he probably will help him be able to disseminate it to players.
Yeah, to me, this is on a personal level, this is a very big kind of test to my theory that I think we really overcomplicate sports. And yes. Particularly, I think we overvalue quote unquote coaching ability and whatnot. Like, I think people think it's way harder than it actually is. And to me, this is going to be a nice test, because the truth is, here it is. This is a guy that he's clearly elevating the talent. He's clearly doing all the things that I think are essential to running a program, from ticket sales to enthusiasm to just kind of creating buzz and energy around your program. And we're about to figure out, do I think Craig Marshall can outcoach him in certain game situations? Sure. But I don't fall into the school of thought that Greg Marshall knows more basketball than him. I can see maybe Greg Marshall, because he's been in the fire a little bit more, having a better gut on what to do instinctually in a particular situation. But this is a big one for me, because I've stood on this, and y'all can attest, and I think part of it, in fairness, comes from coaches themselves, because I think deep down they know there's no other profession in the world where they're going to make this much money. And so I think they kind of protect themselves and act like it's, rocket science, or act like it's something that it's really not. But this is a test, man.
Yeah, it's. I just think it's about players. I think if you get players, you can win. If you don't have players, you can't win. It's no more complicated than that. He's going to get players. He's going to put them out on the court. He's going to let them play.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, he's already elevated the roster this year. He has the best transition class of any new head coach currently. To me, it's not that difficult. Mike Krzyzewski is someone that almost every basketball person unanimously agrees is a very smart coach. Well, when everyone else started getting better players than he did, he started losing, and losing in a big way. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, Mike Krzyzewski decides, hey, we've got to get in on this one and done thing. Why? Well, because they're the better players. I don't know. I feel like we have elevated this idea that a coach is some type of genius, and it's weird to me, because no other person, honestly, in sports talks more than a coach, and very rarely do you ever go, man, I want that guy doing my taxes.
Yeah, we've talked about this forever. It's the whole value of coaching thing is the ability to get out of your own way. And at the end of the day, go watch these NBA games over the first round of the playoffs. Who's winning? Typically the team with the best players. Did Tyronn Lue become a better coach in 48 hours? No, LeBron took a game over.
And boy, did he. Holy cow.
That first quarter. But you know what? What's amazing about that?
48, though, right?
Yeah, and if he only has 45, they lose. He has to carry them.
It is weird, though. It is weird to think that, because I've watched both games now. It's like in game one, he was experimenting. Like, he really has so little respect for the Eastern Conference playoffs that, he thinks he can take certain games and essentially just treat them like the lab. Like, he was trying to see who could do what in a playoff game, and you're sitting there going, this is the 4-5 matchup.
Yeah, I know this is hot take. He's one of the all-time greats, obviously. Maybe the all-time great. Maybe number two, I don't know. I don't know that there's enough around him this time to get there. And I don't know that as he gets a little older, he is human. I don't know that he has we'll see in game three and game four. They're going back to Indianapolis, and those will be tough games. We'll see whether he just has the energy that is required to just carry a team. I don't know that he does.
Oh, I don't think he has as much around him this year as he's had in the past, but I also think the East is worse than it's been in the past. Like, Boston would have been a legitimate threat, but here they are missing probably three of their top four guys coming into the season that they're missing right now. So I don't think they're a serious threat. I know metrically Toronto is different this year. I know they play defense, but I still look at them and see a team that won so many games because they went 10 deep in the regular season. And that's just usually not something that works in the playoffs. And I think we saw it the other night with Philly. I'm not trying to overreact too much to one game, but they clearly still have a learning curve.
Took a break in our talk with Jeffrey. Today, the podcast is also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website, or there in Holly Springs. You can give them a call at 662-252-2321. Get great service. Bob Lominick and his team, including Sildenafil, $10 alternative to that $50 or $60 little blue pill. Same length and effectiveness. Get you ready in as little as 15 minutes. Been telling you about that for a long time. And here recently, been telling you they also are operating G&M Pharmacy in Oxford. It is there on South Lamar, so give them a chance as well as they deliver local there in the Oxford area.
The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell and Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. It's located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. You can go in, test drive one, tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about it here on the podcast at rebelgrove.com, and you will get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. We're also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based Remax Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site, harryalexander.com, click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you are looking for, what you might be interested in. The results that you get are updated daily, and then let Harry take it from there. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Now back to Jeffrey Wright on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Sure, and Embiid's not playing yet. And there's no promise that he's going to play. It looks like he's going to play, but until he does and you see him play effectively, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to go, oh, they're there. Now, give me Philly and Eastern Conference Championship odds for next year, and I'm interested.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that's kind of what it boils down to. Like, but when I look at the scope of the East, even though I don't think this Cavs team is, I think of the four iterations of the Cavs since LeBron's come back, I think this is the weakest. I still think in general, probably the East is weaker than it's been in any of those 4 years.
Do you see where Donovan Mitchell became the first rookie? Think about this.
Yeah, I'm trying to not bring it up.
No. I loved it. I watched it last night, and I thought, I think the kid's a superstar. I've watched Utah a lot this year, and this kid is special, man. He has a different kind of motor than your typical NBA rookie. He carries himself in a different way. It's not doesn't talk a lot. He's not up in your face. He's just a different kid. I love the kid. I like Utah. He's the first rookie to score a combined 55 plus points in his first two NBA playoff games since David Robinson in 1990.
See, LeBron's overrated. LeBron never did that.
This kid, man, he's – and Quinn Snyder does not –
To your point, I've seen him in person twice, and he's also – I don't know what the term is, but he's like – you don't realize how much he's scoring until you kind of look up at the stat sheet in the third quarter. You're like, damn, dude's got 28 already. Like, it's, I don't know, like, you know what I mean? It's, everything's quiet.
The Thunder went on a 19-0 run in the third quarter. They were up 10 with about a minute left in the third, and they were getting ready to run them out. And this kid just made buckets. Made tough shots. I mean, defended shots.
And the other thing is, last night, when Utah basically said, all right, we have this possession to either end the game or to essentially end the game, they immediately turned the ball right to him. Like, no questions asked. And the best part is, Oklahoma City knew it, too, and the guy just, God, he hit a tough shot.
He hit a tough shot. They defended him. It's here comes hot take. I think the Jazz are now winning this series. And I think last night, that fourth quarter, will go down as the second worst fourth quarter in the Thunder's history. Because I think there will be serious ramifications for it.
Ooh. So you don't think that if they don't get out, you think in fairness, so your point is they need to get out of the first round to have the best chance possible to keep this core together.
Yes. Here's the thing. Carmelo can opt in. All Carmelo has to do is just sign a piece of paper, basically, that goes, I'm in. They got to pay him $28 million next year.
Isn't it financially beneficial for Carmelo to opt in?
Well, it depends. I mean, there's some people that are saying if, like, let's say in a hypothetical world, George stays and signs some derivation of a max deal, that they could go to Carmelo and get him to opt out and then sign him to a 3-year deal at like $39 million for three, which is more than anybody else is going to give him. I mean, the NBA, as you know, because you see it all the time, is a young man's game, and Melo is not a young guy anymore. But I don't know. I thought it was a devastating quarter. We'll see. I think they've got to go get one in Utah. They're in deep trouble, and I don't know that they can get one in Utah. I just don't know that they are a consistent enough team. And Gobert is the best defensive player in the league because of what he can do at the rim to change games. Gobert versus Russell Westbrook is fascinating because Gobert takes away one of the things. He's maybe the only guy in the NBA who can take away the one thing that makes Russell Westbrook great. And that's his ability to drive to the rim and soar over taller people. He can do it against anybody else in the league. Gobert's a different beast.
Well, the one thing that I find interesting, I think it was Kevin Pelton. I did so many shows last week that it's all running together. But we had an NBA guest on, and he made the point, and I think I had heard you say this too, so it kind of resonated with me, but His big take was, if Melo was the one with the season-ending injury versus Roberson, he would have had the Thunder as the team most likely to either upset the Rockets or upset the Warriors. He said, based on, obviously, said in his opinion, had Roberson not gotten hurt,
yeah,
they would have probably gotten three. So
yeah, they would have gotten the three, and they'd be scary. Roberson, if you look at their, we're getting into nerd stuff, the net 100, you know, 100 possessions.
Yes, per, yeah.
Yeah, per 100. If you look at those with the Thunder, pre-Roberson's injury, post-Roberson's injury, the numbers are just, they're diametrically opposed. They were, and if you look at their trends in the 3 or 4 weeks leading up to Roberson's injury when they really started to play well, they were beginning to play like a elite team, and it had nothing to do with Carmelo.
Yeah, and I mean, I can clearly see that. All right, I wanted to ask you all about this. So the report came out from John Talti on, was it Monday? Was it Monday or Tuesday?
I think it was Monday, but I'm not 100%.
Okay. And I don't want this to come off as some type of criticism of the reporting and whatnot, because that's not what it is. I'm legitimately asking a question. I understood that it said according to multiple sources, but did that story not read to you guys like a single source story?
You're referring to the Freeze Saban Sankey
Correct.
Story? It did to me.
If you can get that, if your editors sign off on that, that was good work.
Oh, and their editors will sign off on anything that gets clicks, because that whole AL.com thing is nothing but clickbait.
I read it. I didn't gloss over it. I read it in detail, but I already knew all of it.
Yeah, where was the news?
We've been talking about it on the podcast. I guess it's getting someone to actually source and say it, but it was sort of the worst kept secret in the world where I went, okay.
Well, we could have written it with the source.
Yeah.
I mean,
the only thing that I did not know, because I really hadn't even tried to know it, was the bylaws that allowed Sankey to overrule.
Yeah, it was a good story. It got, I'm sure it got lots of clicks and lots of talk.
Yeah, I keep always wondering. I'm convinced that Saban probably wanted to hire him in some capacity. I'm still not convinced that it was going to be to run his offense.
I've heard different things.
Let me say this. I think it's very convenient that that narrative is being spun.
Saban was in Mobile Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Quote, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Hugh Freeze as a coach. I think he did a fabulous job when he was at Ole Miss. He has been a friend that I've shared ideas with and spent time with and know his family as Miss Terry does know his family. Who calls his wife Miss? So we have a tremendous amount of respect. Would you ever say Miss Kara? I mean, I would never say Miss Laura. Or my dad, I don't think, would say, well, go talk to Miss Judy. That is weird.
Well, when you're speaking to a child, I guess you would say that, but that'd be the only instance.
But not to fellow adults.
No.
Anyway, not in a speaking engagement.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Anyway, he says, so we have a tremendous amount of respect for him. We also have a lot of respect for the SEC and what they think is, in some cases, best for the league relative to circumstances that people created for themselves. But I have a lot of respect for Hugh, and I think he'll be back in our profession, and we wish him and his family the very best. And if we can do anything to help him, we'll be happy to do that.
See, I don't hear a lot of, like, I don't know. Like, to me, that sounds like something that someone that shares an agent would say about another coach.
I mean, I do think he thinks he's a good coach. He did a good job at Ole Miss. We've chronicled this. It doesn't sound like a guy that when the SEC said no, that he said, no, damn it, I'm going to fight you here. He went, okay. Barry Odom, I think, fought the league more than Saban did.
And I can understand that. I don't know. Like, to me, I really thought the whole Innsworth story thing was a weird thing. Like, I don't know. Like, this to me was just another example of a weird story around him.
If you're Hugh Freeze at the end of this year, I asked Chase this earlier in the week.
All right.
And here are your choices. You can be a coordinator at the Power 5 level, or uh-huh. You can be the head coach at Middle Tennessee, South Alabama, Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss. That realm of program, not a specific program, that realm right. of so program. What do you do?
Group of five, but in the Southeast.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the route is – I think the route is go be a coordinator and rehabilitate your image, because I'm not convinced at this point. And if those that are around Freeze, though, I don't think it really matters, because I think he's just going to do what he wants to do. I think that's pretty well chronicled. I think if he goes immediately to a program and starts running it again, he's going to revert back to old habits. And I don't think that's ever going to move him up again. I think it's going to keep him in that, you know, I think it's going to keep him in that realm for a very, very, very long time. Whereas if he goes and does the coordinator thing, and especially if it's under someone, you know, like if it's under someone like Saban, where you get it on your resume and Saban controls all the media stuff around you, he takes your Twitter away. Like, if I think Hugh has to go and recognize that you have to, you can do this job without being a Twitter preacher. And I don't think he would recognize that or grasp that if he just went straight next year and started being a head coach again.
You know, I couldn't agree more. That's why I thought when the whole Alabama thing happened and everybody was emotional about it and stuff, I thought for Hugh Freeze, the person, for Hugh Freeze, the guy who wants to be a coach again, the one great thing that Nick Saban would have taught him would have been discipline in that regard. And I'm not even talking about massage parlors and all that crap. I'm talking about Twitter. Getting off that social media stuff, it would have forced him to be a coach, to concentrate on coaching, to concentrate on the kids, to work on the game plans, those kinds of things. And he would have been able to really, through just osmosis, notice the discipline that Saban has as it pertains to things of that nature.
I know we were making fun of the whole Miss Terry thing, but I'll tell you what else was revealing in that story to me. The one quote from Freeze at the end of the story, dude, he's referring to himself in the third person again.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Is that right?
Yes. He's like, I'm going to be a better coach. I'll tell you what, they're going to get a better coach Freeze. Like, I don't think he's smart enough, and I don't particularly think he's a good enough football coach to be as, I guess, arrogant's the word, but like it, just this idea that like, and I mean, he paid for it. I mean, yeah, he lost $17 million because of his attitude, but I just, until he recognizes that he's not the world's greatest gift to the game of football, I think he's going to really, really struggle.
I think he's beyond that. I think until he is able to make the distinction between football and this building people's lives thing, it's football, scoreboard. Nick Saban would tell him we're in the scoreboard business. We're in the process of getting – and Saban likes to talk about the process and all that stuff, and I know what he means.
It's all to the scoreboard.
But all of the process with Saban is finishing with more points than the other team.
Exactly.
That's all part of the process. Now, Saban can take a loss in September, and this is to his credit. This is not me making fun of him. I think he's that guy that can lose a game in September or October and get on the bus and immediately flip. Okay, how are we going to use this to get better to our advantage? How are we going to take this and let it transform us as a football team? He's genius at that. He's proven it. Better than a lot of people who – and I think Freeze would learn from that. You know, a lot of people who it's on Tuesday, they're still just burning about Saturday. I honestly believe Saban is that guy that can lose a game like the one he lost in Oxford in October of 14 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it pissed him off and it made him mad as hell, but he got in the bus. And I'm telling you, before they got out of Oxford, he was already thinking, okay, how are we going to use this to change our DNA?
I mean, the same thing next year. And it was earlier in the season, and they obviously had some quarterback shuffling, but he used that loss to where the entire coaching staff got on the same page. All right, Jake Coker's our quarterback, you know, and they some maybe administrative stuff with that staff he was able to kind of hammer out. And I don't know, like, to me also, I think it was you and Jay, y'all were on the beer garden, and there's still, it's more than just Twitter that I think Hugh has to learn personally. Like, y'all were discussing about, I think, Neil, I think you got the game wrong. I think it was the LSU game where Hugh brought everyone in for the film session, because it was when Bo threw the ball. Remember, it was the pass that Hugh.
No, it was Hugh, it was. Trust me, it was A&M.
So it was the Jamez Logan one.
I can't remember who the receiver was. It was late in the game. It was a Manziel game, and Ole Miss got it last, and they were moving because if you remember, no one could stop anyone in that game.
Yeah.
And Bo made a bad read, missed a wide open receiver that would have been a touchdown, and kind of forced a throw, and it led to a pick that won the game.
There was a smaller group, but he definitely, after that LSU, I guess the larger point is, after the LSU game, when it was his decision to not kick the field goal, I know for a fact what he was trying to do. He was trying to, like, LSU calls timeout. He ends up sending the offense back on. He was going to sneak Cody Core deep, and they were going to hit a touchdown play. They were going to win the game, and then he was going to talk about how brilliant, you know, the play was and whatnot, and he was going to have his fingerprints on a win. Well, he sent his offense back out, and the safeties didn't bite. And Bo chose to not – I'm sure what he was told, instructed on the sideline, if it's not there, throw it away. We'll still have time. Bo threw it. But that's a coaching thing because you're the one that sent the offense back out there, and that's a risk that you run when you put the ball in the air. Like, I don't think he's – even at this point in his career – I don't think he's beyond still not taking blame for that. I don't think he's wired that way.
Yeah, I get that. That third person gets at you. He's used that a lot. I think he might have used that in a Taylor Polk story I wrote back in December, too, if I remember that correctly.
Well, that's what stuck out to me because of your – I remember thinking when I read it in your story, like, that's weird.
Oh, Lord. All right, who's on your show today?
So today we have Britt Robson of The Athletic.
Ooh.
He had a long sit-down with Sam Mitchell, who we mentioned at the earlier in the show. So he's going to join, and then we'll be, of course, discussing Tiger recruiting during the second hour. So get your blue and white pom-poms ready, baby.
All right. Talk to you later, bud. Thanks to Jeffrey, as always, for giving us a little time on his busy mornings. The podcast is also brought to you by Brandon White at Keys to Dream Travels, completely free service, specializing in Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations, taking the stress out of planning, taking care of dining, fast pass reservations, transportation, anything else you need for your vacation, an expert in getting you out of line and onto more rides, no matter the crowds. Mention the podcast to get a $25 Disney gift card for booking a vacation and contact him for a free, no obligation quote at brandon@keystodreamtravel.com. Or 901-634-8687.
Jeffrey Wright and other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Let Billy's Pecans handle all the details and leaving you to handle the thank yous. At Billy's Pecans, they know the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, or tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, they will handle it all with expertise and excellence with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point you simply can't choose wrong. Additionally, you can customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to Billy's Pecans round boxes so your brand is front of mind and their decadent flavors are there to back it up. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans and more, and it couldn't be any more satisfying. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. And we are brought to you by Lauren Ballack Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's in Dallas. If you are moving to Dallas, living in Dallas, looking to buy or sell a home in the Metroplex, give Lauren Ballack Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's a call. A rebel by marriage, Lauren specializes in East Dallas and has a network that extends throughout the DFW Metroplex. Lauren loves cheering on the Rebs. She would love to help Rebel fans in Dallas or moving to Dallas sell their home or find and buy their new one. Lauren is consistently ranked as a top agent producer in D Magazine and was recently named a 2017 Advocate Top 10 Realtor in the Lakewood East Dallas area. So whether you're moving home, buying, selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, you need a realtor who knows the town. That's Lauren, 469-867-1734. Or go to her website, laurenandkelly.com.
Once you have a realtor to help you out, you're going to need help with your mortgage. Community can do that. They're in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you can local underwriting and understand your market. And also a leader in condo financing in Oxford. Cannot talk today. Anyway, Oxford. Ask Jason about the flow down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704. or JLo, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Asked Mike Bianco about this last night. They beat Arkansas State 10-3, moving to 30-8 on the season. They have only lost one game in the non-conference so far this season, I believe 22-1 in non-conference play, also 11-0 in midweek games this year. So those are good numbers. Hard to do just from a attention span, that's baseball standpoint, frankly, if nothing else. So Ryan Olenek came out of the game in the fourth inning. He's fine. He hit a ball off his toe, and Mike had decided he'd seen enough of Ryan against Arkansas State for the night. So he pulled him about halfway through the game. Jordan Fowler was good. They got a good start from, a good outing from Will Stokes as well. That was kind of the centerpiece of my story following the game last night. But I asked him, the NCAA approved yesterday for every college baseball team to play two games against outside competition in the fall and it not count against the 56-game schedule. So they can play another team from whoever they want twice in the fall and it not count. Softball's been doing this for a long time. Baseball used to do it a long time ago, and then they prohibited it in 1992. I think in recent years you could do it, but it counted against your spring schedule if you so chose. So now they can do that. I asked Mike. He said he would like to put it either before or after a home football game to get some crowds in and put some uniforms in around home football games.
So yeah.
Asked him who he want to play, and he said he had just a profile of a team he kind of would like to play, and he said he hadn't got that far yet. I had no idea. But I don't know if he's trying to play like Delta State or if he's trying to bring in Kentucky. I don't know. I would bring in an SEC team that is not on my spring schedule, one of those offshoot rotation teams.
And you work out a deal with the other coach where it's like, okay, look, I'm gonna throw this guy for an inning, and then I'm going to throw this guy for an inning.
Yeah, we're just hanging out here.
We're not chilling. We're not trying to kill each other here. Let's get some work in. Let's see where some people are.
Yeah.
Get some at-bats.
He just said it broke up the monotony. He was in favor of it. Fine, whatever.
And whoever loses, I am going to absolute fire so-and-so.
Omaha is over at that point in October.
If you lose this game in October to Kentucky, you're clearly not going to Omaha. You're not in position to do it. It's time to make a change while there's still time to fix this damn thing.
All right, this is your division. We're going to kind of close with this. Reds fired Brian Price yesterday.
Because it's all his fault.
Also fired pitching coach Mack Jenkins. And here's what they're going to do. They are hiring bench coach Jim Riggleman as the interim manager. So the guy that was in the right-hand seat for this 3-15 start, suddenly now he's the manager. They're going to take the manager out of Louisville, Pat Kelly, their AAA team, make him the bench coach, and then taking the AA pitching coach and make him part of the staff as well. Okay. This fixes nothing.
B, yes, it does.
You're 18 games into a season. You knew you were going to suck anyway. What difference does it make at this point? You're just trying to lose for draft picks. Number three, so the bench coach is suddenly going to be a better representative than Price for some stupid reason? Four, we're in theory going to lessen the developmental possibilities of our AA and AAA teams by weakening their staffs and breaking up that continuity to put those guys in major league roles when they're going to suck anyway? What difference? Help me here.
This is going to fix it.
Because of what?
A new voice.
Okay. Riggleman suddenly moving over a spot in the dugout.
He's going to change the voice. Going to bring in a new pitching coach from Louisville. He's going to come up with some ideas.
The pitching coach is from Pensacola.
Whatever. Ideas.
There too.
New voices. A new face. Fix it. Has nothing to do with the fact that the Cubs, Cardinals, and Brewers have more talent and that Pittsburgh has a really talented young team that's off to a hot start. Nothing. In fact, I think the Reds will now win the World Series.
In all seriousness, can you explain to me what their reasoning might potentially be, even from a PR standpoint?
No, it tells me that it's a complete disaster. If I'm Joey Votto, unless I am just so ingrained in the Cincinnati community that I can't leave, I'm on the phone with my agent going, get me the hell out of here. And when the agent goes, but no, get me out. I'm paying you to get me out of here, so start working on it right now. You've got till July 31st to get me the hell out of here. I got to go. Unless winning doesn't matter to you, because you're not winning anytime soon, and this is a panic move.
just a dumb move. It's 18 games.
Well, dumb and panic are the same thing. 18 games. Are you really? I mean, you really? There's 100 and
again, you weren't. You knew you weren't making the playoffs.
Well, you knew you were finishing last.
So what difference does it make?
Does it matter that you suck a little more than you thought you might suck? And if so, then who are you kidding? Be transparent to your fan base. See, they started telling their fan base that we're close. We're close. Got these young players. We're close. No, you're not. You're not close. You're nowhere close. Don't lie to your fans. Be honest. Nothing worse than building people's expectations. Nothing. Under-promise, over-deliver.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to tell a potential advertiser, hey, we're going to change your business? 3 months from now, you're going to be just killing it. Killing it because of us. No. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to try. We've had success. We think we're going to be successful. We'll work with you. We certainly are hopeful. Even if you're thinking, you know what, this might really work. We're going to kill it. You don't say, you're going to sell $8 million worth of stuff because of us. And then when they don't,
yeah,
they told their fans, we're about to win. We're close. And fans look at it and go, you're not close.
Then you started 2-5 and you look up and you're 3-18 or 3-15 or 3-16 or whatever they are.
And they don't have the pitching to win in the National League right now. Yeah. And everyone knew it, leaving camp.
Oh, Lord. All right. We will, again, be back tomorrow. A couple different guests for you. Anthony Dasher, Neil Stratton on tomorrow's show. Got a hockey beer garden coming today as well. So stay in tune with MPW Digital and our family of podcasts. We'll talk to you on Friday.